Welcome to the Compass Podcast. Today we're joined by Wolfie Zhao, a researcher and former Bitcoin mining journalist at The Block. Wolfie digs into current 2022 narratives, including the public mining industry, the finance market for mining, and the manufacturing game. This podcast is presented ad-free by Compass Mining, the largest marketplace for Bitcoin mining. Check out compassmining.io today if you want to buy, sell, or host an ASIC. And now, onto the show. Wolfie, thanks for joining today on the Compass Podcast. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me. Good to see you again.
Yeah, great to see you also. It's been a few months. I think we had you last time on the podcast in November with David Pan from CoinDesk, just talking about Bitcoin mining, Bitcoin and journalism. So a very different conversation than today. But that was a good conversation. I think anyone who's been in the media space for a while always likes talking about media. But today we're going to talk a little bit more about Bitcoin mining and the research that you do at The Block. So excited for that.
Cool. Let's jump into it.
Yeah. So there's definitely like a lot of different conversation topics that we can nail. I think that we should probably stick to the purview of your work at The Block as a researcher. I think just the depth of understanding of the mining market you have is really going to help out here, since you've been covering also as a reporter for many years. Are you the longest standing Bitcoin mining journalist? I feel like you could be out there for a record.
I don't know. I started covering like track. I started like end of 2018, I guess, around like when Bitmain was filing for that IPO in Hong Kong. Then have been keeping track of the space. That was, you know, at that time, like the mining thing in China was pretty big and dominant. So a lot of activities. And then I switched to the research side of the blog like around December last year. And now I just focus fully on mining related research pieces for clients. Over the past like couple months, we did a series of research pieces touching on basically, I guess, most of the parts of the ecosystem. I think what's pretty good is that, you know, over since like, I think 2018, between 2018 and 2020, there weren't many like public listed mining companies. We're just like a handful of them, maybe like two or three. So the information that was public was really not so much, very little publicly available data. So a lot of time it would rely on, you know, on-chain data. On-chain data was only about the whole network was doing. So you can't really drill into like different companies per se. But I think in 2021, we saw like a pretty big increase of companies that are listed, at least getting access to the public markets, and they are all filing different kinds of disclosures of their business, how they're operating, their hash rate, their future plans, their investor presentations, SEC filings. Now I kind of like, maybe we have two dozens of public listed companies with big or small market cap. And there are a couple of others that are pending listing. I think like four or five pending listing. So hopefully like by the end of this year, we'll see like maybe 30 of them that can give a lot of good information about their business and using as a kind of proxy for us to understand more how these companies are doing and all that. So I think, you know, some of the quick highlights of what we have done so far, I think a lot of the North American mining companies, they placed like big orders last year, buying, I think, like million units of ASICs, like S19 or equivalent models that are due for shipments in 2022 and 2023. So that's a lot of hash rate that can be added to the network if the manufacturers can ship the equipment on time. And but also at the same time, like I think everybody's like, now currently the supply shortage is not really about the equipment, but like who can complete the infrastructure build out the soonest, so that they can plug in the machines much faster. And I think that is what's also going on. I looked through some of the findings and press releases. I think there are about like dozen to 20 mining companies are building multi-gigawatts of capacity globally. That kind of like 5-6 gigawatts, and over 4 gigawatts are in the US, and a lot of them are in Texas for sure. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely interesting that we have so many like construction projects going on and are expected to complete this year and next year, and plugging the mining equipment gradually as they, you know, complete the infrastructure phase by phase. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely a growing market, and it's a totally different game now than last year.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of how many miners went public last year, or at least in some form or fashion went public or were going public through like SPACs, IPOs, or direct listings. It's like around 15 to 20, and there's supposed to be like a bunch more this year. There's definitely a lot more information than we've gotten in the past. I'm just personally curious, going back into what you're saying a second ago, there's only a lot of on-chain data in 2018, 2019, 2020, and now we have all this dearth of public information for miners, which prior mining really operated in this very opaque sector, right? It was very hard to get information, hard to get into a mine, hard to get information out of manufacturers about what they're building, hard to get information about future deployments. I'm assuming like your job's a lot easier now, but, or maybe it's not the case because there's so much more information to parse through.
Yeah. I think what's different for like Bitcoin mining related research is that they're all of, a lot of the information is not on chain. So you can't really pull data just from the blockchain. Like a lot of the things they do interact with the blockchain, but the way they disclose it, it's not really from the blockchain itself. So like you have to look through all of the filings, and the filings can be super long, and you know, interesting details are often buried in, you know, small paragraphs bypassing, and you know, you just have to find it. And so it's good that we have more transparency per se. It's just like getting those information is also an interesting process. And also like, for example, like we previously were hard to really calculate the mining cost as a from a company perspective, right? You can say like I bought all of S19 Pros, and then I can get a rough estimate. If I have like 5 cents USD per kilowatt hour, I can know what's the break even price. But you know, when you put it into a business, there are all of other things that you need to add on that. There's not just the cost of revenues. You need to hire a lot of people to maintain this facilities. You have office, you're now a public company that you have to be governed in a more professional and structured way. So you have to have a lot of more cost that needs to be added in. And these kind of details, and now we're able to get. So it's definitely more interesting. Like, if you look at S19 Pro, will have like maybe 4K, 5K break-even price for cost of mining one Bitcoin. But when you add into all the cost of revenues and also all the operating cash-based expenses, you know, paying for your executives, office rent, and all the other stuff, things can go up. But to what extent? Like that is what we can get from the public data. So it's actually higher than, you know, what companies will say for sure. But given Bitcoin price is still like 40K, I think it's, yeah, still a pretty profitable business, even though we're down from the all-time high by a lot.
Yeah, definitely. Hash price is still doing pretty good. I don't know if you track that metric very much, but it's still doing pretty solid.
The revenue per terahash?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The hash rate, I think year to day, like for the past 3 months, it has grown, I think like 10% from 180 to like now 200. And it's not really moving really rapidly so far over the last, like, I guess, two cycles. That's also interesting. Like people saying, you know, we can see the maybe 300 or even 300, over 300 exahash by the end of the year. I think based on the purchases that people made, it's entirely possible. If you have like over 1 million ASICs, like S19s, they already have like 100 exahash additional, but always depends on like how many miners you can energize, right? like some companies have a lot of the miners that they receive sitting idle in the warehouse. There are a lot of delays of I guess like construction and also logistics. It's kind of a pain to see, like a lot of opportunity costs.
You had that tweet about Marathon, which is really interesting. That was from a disclosure, like an investor note.
Yeah, it's good that they disclose that every month, how many they received from Bitmain, how many they plug in. So like the last time I saw the year today, like since like maybe 2021, early 2021, they received like over 100,000 ASICs from Bitmain. At some point, like later last year, they even used like charter flights to ship the equipment because the logistics was pretty disrupted due to the pandemic. So they have a lot of like over 100,000. And then I think as of end of February, they plugged in like some 3.8 exahash. So not less than 40% of the miner were energized. So the amount of miners that aren't energized can deliver Bitcoin that is more than what they generate in a month. So it's kind of pain.
yeah. It's definitely like a narrative. I think that's a good place to take the conversation is narratives we've seen from last year moving into this year and narratives at the moment as well. And it seems like the logistics thing is not going away. Like that was certainly a thing last year, but it's changed a little bit where now it's supply bottlenecks for building facilities with orders going forward. And like these public miners have put a lot of orders up and Bitmain's delivering them, but they don't seem to be any place to place the machine. So Compute North is the hosting provider for a lot of what Marathon does. And it seems they're having some construction delays or something. And that's causing Marathon to just leave machines on the ground. Is that right?
Yeah, I think they definitely are trying to like resolve the problem as soon as possible. I mean, it's huge opportunity cost. Like what can six exahash do? Like, I don't know, at least dozens of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
A day.
It's a lot of Bitcoin. That blows.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the China crackdown really like messed up, like kind of like a butterfly, kind of the ripple effect is just like larger than people thought. It's not just about shutdown, right? It's just whole hosting capacity crunch. Like when those companies ordered the machines, they didn't foresee that those Chinese companies were rushing to, you know, elsewhere in the world to source electricity. But yeah, I think we need some time to like digest all that kind of demand. But hopefully like construction will go on as, you know, phase by phase.
Yeah, it's a good way of putting it, like the butterfly effect of all these things. I think it also gets really interesting when you look at the public moves that firms like Marathon are making with capital markets, putting out like convertible notes, stuff like that. Maybe dive into that a little bit. I know you've done some recent research speaking about the capital raises that some of these firms have undergone.
Yeah. We did one. So I think 2021 was like pretty big in terms of like Bitcoin mining financing. So like I think you know, when we look at like mining in China back then, there were many ways for those mining investors to get external capital when they want to expand their mining fleet or their infrastructure. The only way they could was like go to lenders and pledge their Bitcoin as collateral, get some leverage and buy machines and was washed out pretty hard after the March 2020 block shit. But now we're seeing like 2021 is a lot of, you know, equity and debt financing. I think for the first like three quarters, it was mostly like equity. Like the usual big names, they offered all of at the market offerings for equity, sold all the private placements. And I think the last quarter was like an uptick for like kind of convertible notes and I guess like debt financing instruments for the public market. And also along these ways, there are a couple of, you know, institutional lenders have always been, you know, trying to negotiate deals with mining companies. We have a couple of them currently, like Galaxy, Foundry, IDIG, Celsius, BlockFi. So it's interesting. Like in the past, like a lot of these US lenders, they will partner with Asia-based ones to kind of so they lend money to the Asia partners, and then they will issue loans to like miners and kind of structure the business like that. But now they're kind of becoming more actively engaging with the mining firms directly. I think that's gonna continue throughout like 2022 and 2023, especially for companies that are trying to hold the Bitcoins and not selling. You still have CapEx and OpEx to pay. You have, and also when the equipment that you pre-ordered last year gonna ship every month, you're gonna have monthly dues. And then you're expanding your infrastructure. So there's a lot of need for working capital. So this trend is gonna continue, I think. And the private lending market is pretty interesting. Like these companies are offering especially like crypto, I guess like crypto lenders, right? So like Foundries and Galaxy, IDIG, they generally offer like an interest rate that's higher than what traditional credit firm will do. There were a couple of like just one or two, not too many, like Trinity and the company called Whitehawk. They did some small amount of equipment financing. But the interest rate was relatively lower. I guess the Bitcoin price was a factor into that. But I guess like Foundry offer, at least from the like 30 something deals that I reviewed, I saw and read through, I think Foundry was offering like 17%. Interest rate per annum, and it's a very interesting strategy. I mean, they themselves bought a lot of equipment early on in 2020 August, and then when they kind of sold this equipment to mining customers, there was a premium because Bitcoin price rallied, and they also issued loans. If you don't have the money to buy the machines from them, and you can borrow money from Foundry, and then you pay a higher interest rate, but you can get the equipment swap. So it's a greater access to resources, and that's something that traditional credit firms don't have. So that's kind of understandable that why their interest rate is also kind of moderate. And also they put like a little bit more strict terms in terms of like how the equipment should be collateralized. And there were also some terms like you can, like I give you, let's say like 30 million loan facilities. You can, you only drew like 1 million of it. And the remaining 29 have some conditions that you have to, you can only draw like maybe half of that remaining amount before you complete a, like say $100 million transaction fundraise. And then you can draw the remaining half of it after you raise that money. So to make sure that the lender's risk is low. So it's a very interesting dynamic that has involved, I think, mining market. Definitely, it is in favor of mining companies in terms of like, even if you are small and you need capital, you definitely do have more alternatives than before in terms of sourcing capital or leverage to take on that risk if you want to expand your business. Because like before, like say before 2020, I think most of the like miners in China, the way they do is, you know, you're a big miner, you mine a lot of Bitcoin, then you convert them. You get more liquidity to buy more machines. So it's like a self-fulfilling cycle, where you don't really have any other leverage, which is kind of not really risky. But now if you, like, there are a lot more options, right? Especially if you want to hold Bitcoin. There are also public mining companies that just say they don't hold any Bitcoin. Like Iris Energy said, they just sell everything. That's the strategy. We sell everything and we use the money we sell to buy more Bitcoin because we're buying more machines. I think it's good that it's interesting to see that kind of different strategy. Like there are two spectrum. Like there's one that just don't sell anything. There's one that sell everything. There's a lot of companies in between. So I think it's interesting to see how they kind of, if at all, they will change if this year is going to be a bear market.
Yeah, no, I'm really keen to see what's going to happen this year if there is a bear market or even just like a lower hash price for these public miners. And I think the interesting thing will be in a few years to see like which strategy work, like hodling like your Bitfarms of the world or selling immediately like your Iris Energy. We can get to that in a second. I want to go back to what you're talking about earlier, though, with the private lending. What kind of interest rates are you talking about? Like how high are these interest rates? And then what's like the deal structure for these things? You and I were talking earlier about how you take out a private loan to buy machines from someone like Foundry. You pay a high interest rate and then you have the deal structured. So if you fall out on the deal, that the Bitcoin is held by the custodian or is it held by the lender or who is it held by?
So there were a couple of contrasts. There was one example between Foundry and Molson Infrastructure Group. That deal was early, I think January 2021. It wasn't like a big amount. It was like 1 million something. And they bought a few hundred watts miners, 500 maybe. So the structure was like the loan was 16.5 or 17, I don't remember, but around that level, 17% annual. So they were trying to buy 500 watts miner and they put a small part of deposits. And then, so the total deal was like 1.3 million. So I guess one watts miner M30 was like 2,600. But I'm pretty sure when Foundry bought the M30s in mid-2020, it was definitely lower than that. So they sold at the premium. I mean, the price rallied, so of course the miners go up. So the total deal was like 1.3 million. They put like a 300 grand for deposits and then they borrowed 1 million from Foundry and with the 17% interest rate. So the deal was like the equipment will be the collateral. So it's essentially not your watts miners, right? So you cannot really overclock them. There's like, you have to gain like the lender's written consent before you can overclock them. And the collateral also includes the mined Bitcoin from this collateralized equipment and the Bitcoin will be deposited to an address controlled by Genesis Trading, presumably for like selling to cover the principals and interests. That's the main gist of the contract. And also they're required to send the hash rate to the pool that is designated by Foundry. I mean, it's gonna be a Foundry USA pool, right? So it's kind of like you pay a higher interest rate, but you get greater access because they have the machines, they have the pools, they have custodian wallets. And so when that's done, I think the term was like 18 months, if I remember correctly, 18 months maturity. So after that, I mean, the machine will be yours, right? So you're kind of like paying a mortgage, right? So like, you're using your monthly paycheck to pay back a mortgage that is upfront. But that's what I think, that's what crypto lenders would choose, which kind of makes sense, right? They want to be more involved in kind of whole business strategy instead of just giving you a loan and collect the interest and we're done. But like, it's kind of a strategy that we bundle more deeply in terms of the business operations here.
The interesting thing to me about what you were saying is like, you definitely pay a premium for being within that enclosed system and like being a part of that private lending group. So like Foundry, for I think, is like a great example, right? You get access to the pool, you get access to the machines, you get access to DCG and all that stuff. You get access to just like the entire system and all the benefits that it incorporates being a part of the Foundry family. But you pay for that with that interest rate, right? That 16 to 17% interest rate you're talking about, which is like almost outrageous when you're thinking about how cheap money is right now, right? Like the Federal Reserve itself is like scared to raise the federal loans rate by like, you know, a few bips, like nothing at all.
That was back in January 2021. But I mean, I guess like still it was pretty high. Well, I guess like it depends on how you want to structure your strategy. I think at that time, if you get access to the spot miners, the problem was like how soon you can get the spot miners, right? At that time, there was like a supply crunch of the miners. So you don't really have any choice if you want to plug in right now, unless you wait. If you're going to wait, then yes. I mean, if you look at like I did a loan with the Stronghold Digital, I think that was also early, like first quarter or early second quarter of 2021. And let me check. I think, that was like around like June 2021. That was like a 10% from IDIC. And also 10% from another traditional credit firm. But that's also because, like, you know, the equipment the money they used to buy the equipment, the equipment was not spot at that point. Like they had to wait. So yeah, I mean, it's different. Like there's a reason why you pay for a higher premium rate. It's not for nothing.
I mean, January 2021, there was not a better time to be mining Bitcoin. And so Foundry, by getting that those West miners off their books, was losing out on possible Bitcoin mining rewards in that place. So you have to cover your books with higher interest rates. I am interested to see, though, and would curious to get your take on this. Are interest rates still that high right now in a possible bear market scenario, or interest rates collapsing? And how does that look for these public mining firms that still perhaps have these higher interest rates on their books, but don't have machines deployed because of a logistics crunch? Is there going to be like possible wipeout scenarios? Do you think that there's a lot of danger for these firms because they're not online, but they still have these really high interest loans out?
Well, I think like in general, I think Bitcoin mining companies, they have a pretty decent profile, like credit profile as a borrower, because, you know, naturally if you have operating hash rate, you have new Bitcoin get generated every month. Regardless of the size, you have some new Bitcoin mining generated. That can either convert it to your liquidity, or, you know, in case of a price crash and you need a margin clause. And so in general, I think as long as like you can plug in your miners like progressionally, I think that's relatively fine. I think for lenders, you know, it's also like looking back from, you know, just deals between Foundry and Moss in January, right? It was pretty safe for Foundry. If you think about it, I lend you the miners and you can plug in and you generate Bitcoin and you will have liquidity to pay me the principals and the interest. So I'm earning the premium of the miners and also earning a safe interest return. And I know you're generating Bitcoin every month. So that's pretty good. I think all these things work together as a whole. Like the miners that you pre-order, the infrastructure they're expanding, and the loan you're getting. Like if you're only getting loans, but you're not moving anywhere in terms of your new operating hash rate and your new infrastructure, then yes, maybe you come a harder time when Bitcoin price crash. Yeah, I think it really depends on how you balance all these things. So if you use the risk management is not really great, and then that again would be we'll have some hard time. And I think in terms of interest rate, I think recently it was like, I think generally it's not as high as 17% anymore. There were a couple of deals that were just 7, 8, 10, 12. One recent one was Isaac was 14% to Cathedral. I don't know why. Maybe because like they're relatively smaller players. Not too many edge rate that can be added like instantly. So, and also like there was one new lender, like Securitize, that company. Not sure if you're familiar. They do like digital asset security kind of platforms. They also have like a capital arm to manage like Bitcoin and Ether USDC yield fund product. It's also like they get LPs to put their money, deposit their money into earn interest, and then they would, you know, also lend the money out to charge a higher interest rate to make that profit, right? So same for like BlockFi, I think. They also get deposits and then they also kind of lend it out like a bank. So I think there are definitely more players in the lending market. So as long as like mining companies need cash, it's definitely some business to do there.
So the mining firms are safe is what you're saying. That's good to hear. at least for the most part, even in a bear market, we could keep riffing on that, but we only have a few more minutes with you. So I want to dive into machine manufacturers, which is definitely something you've covered for a long time. Just like lay the groundwork for this part of the conversation. We have Intel announcing that it's actually going to build its new chip. Looks like it's a chip. Doesn't look like if they're going to build their own machine. There's been some images online, but most of the releases today have said like Argo is going to pursue building their own white label miner, Grid, same, Block, likely similar. And then we have like Bitmain, obviously, has been counterpunching with a bunch of new releases of its S19XP, S19XP Hydro, S19 Pro Plus Hydro, like a lot of different variants. That XP version, of course, with the 5-nanometer chip is a big thing. And then lastly, we also have some people in the ranks, like MicroBT obviously was like a big up-and-comer in 2019, 2020, and really dug into the market cap for Bitmain. But they seem to be taking like almost a backseat in a lot of conversations I've seen so far. And then there's Canaan also lurking in the background, trying to remake its image, especially in North America, where a lot of the hash rate's migrating. So with that context in mind, tell me what you think about the manufacturing game right now. Is it maturing? Is it taking a step forward? Or is information out there a little too hypebeast and should be taken with more salt?
Yeah, I think we're definitely... This is like the Moore's law, right? I think we're kind of getting to that kind of plateau in terms of hash rate, like efficiency growth. So, you know, back for like, when was the S9? S9 was 2016. So, 6 years. The efficiency, like three times tripled, from 90 to 100 wattage to not like less than 30. So, I think in the next 6 years, it's harder to see that kind of same 3x kind of efficiency boost just by purely relying on chip technology advancement. That's also why, like, you see, I think Bitmain is launching those like liquid cool versions. They basically use liquid cool and you already overclock them. So to max out the juice of the chips that would be on an air-cooled machines, right? So I think for Intel, it's just interesting to see like when the actual second generation, what's called BZM2, how the chip is doing, and also who is going to be the OEM to make the full system. Because like based on the data from the first generation BZM1, they definitely lack the expertise in the miner full system design. Because like a chip was what, 55 joule per terahash, and when it turned to a miner, it was 90 joule per terahash. So you lost a lot of the efficiency there. It's basically I think the way it worked is like it's not you do put the 300 chips into a hash board, four hash boards. But it's not just as simple as like putting them into a serial circuit. There are a lot of software and hardware design that you need to optimize so that each chip can deliver their max performance in terms of hash rate and also the power consumption. So definitely from the first generation of Intel, it wasn't that impressive. So, and yes, it looks like they're gonna just sell the chip, and they and different companies need to hire their own, like I guess OEM. And there was one interesting detail from the grid contract with Intel, but they redacted a lot of the information, a lot of the important details. But there was one part where it said grid will get the license, will get a supply of the design. Proprietary design from Intel, so of a system. So it looks like Grid is gonna also somehow look for different partners or kind of do it their own to make the full miner. So how can they optimize that system, the firmware, the hardware, the design? So that's also a question. Hopefully they can do better. But yeah, in terms of like MicroBT and Bemin, I think I heard MicroBT is also trying to have their own like kind of liquid kind of solution. But like, yeah, I think MicroBT generally speaking is, in terms of business perspective, they're more conservative than Bemin. They don't really go out and do large scale events, fly all their customers into Dubai. And was it Dubai this year? Last year. So they kind of cagey you about because they're a Chinese company and they don't want to make too big of a fuss. Like, they're selling enough capacity to their customers, so you know, just do the business as usual. But I think in terms of like hash rate, we're getting to a kind of a plateau, like it's kind of slower growth of hash rate increase. We're not gonna see the kind of steep like jump from like 6 years ago. But yeah, I think liquid cooling is also pretty interesting. I think the only time that Bitmain launched a like hydro liquid cooling was for the S9. I don't remember which year, maybe 2019 or 2018, but that was it. Definitely, it's definitely great to see like if this thing can be apply at a large scale. Like they, you know, now they sell those kind of big box where you fill those S19 hydro. Yeah, I mean, it just looks way better than immersion cooling. I mean, it looks so clean and not messed up. Like, you don't need the tanks and you don't need the fluid and you need the pipes and all that headache. And you need to customize the firmware. You need to dismantle the fans and, you know, with the liquid cooling, it's firmware, stock firmware, the much better choice. But yeah, if we can see a lot more deployment of those, I think there's also less noise. I do see a lot of the reports from the US, like different neighborhoods complaining about those liquid mining facilities, like smaller ones, maybe sites that are disrupting the communities. I think that's kind of thing. Upgrade in terms of a technology.
Just to jump in there really quick, I think the US noise thing, I've noticed that too. And the Block had an article about that yesterday with the Tennessee neighborhood taking up some action against a Bitcoin mining farm. I think it's like an interesting corollary, or at least an interesting part of like the China Bitcoin mining ban, where all these miners would come to the United States and they were trying to plug in wherever they could. And now they're just pissing off people in neighborhoods who are trying to like live their normal lives. And I think it's funny because it's like definitely putting a bad taste in some people's mouth. Like the first intro they have to Bitcoin is like this horrendous, yeah, huge noise going on in their neighborhood. Like I saw
a news report. There was, I don't remember which company, but they explicitly said, when everybody is looking for the cities, we're not going there because you go so crammed and everybody's there in the big cities. We're going for those overlooked towns where we can generate jobs and all that. I don't know. It's there always be a community. People just don't like the vicinity of a mining facility that generate too much noise.
Yeah. I mean, I think immersion and liquid cooling is definitely taking off in different ways. It's interesting to see, like, it's on the manufacturing side, but it's also on the proprietary facility side that you're seeing both these things taking off. One's immersion and one's just like straight up hydro where it's built into the box. Any predictions for what amount of hash rate you think in the next year or so will be immersion based? You think it's still just going to be single digit?
Oh, I haven't thought about that. I mean, maybe single digit percentage. But like maybe we won't ship this thing until like maybe even later this year or like Q1, Q2 next year. So depends on like how big the order is. I'm sure it would be much more expensive than regular air cooled, I guess 19, but it's already overclocked. So yeah, maybe single digit. I don't know. I just think we will definitely see like larger scale of kind of either liquid cooled or immersion cooled miners, which is kind of interesting, especially for like immersion cooled. I think it's not so standard, but if you buy like a hydro version, like it's really standard because like manufacturers will have tested it already. They will make sure that it does deliver the performance. But like if you do immersion, yeah, I'm curious how the data will look like. But I think if we have like a seen a larger scale of deployment, it will have like a better results of the data to be a better reference for benchmark, which will be also like kind of useful.
Yeah, I've seen like a few photos of ant spaces being shipped around the United States, some Wyoming and Texas.
Mm.
So I think it's S19 Hydro Pro for that setup, probably not the XP yet. But that's one of the unfair questions I like to ask guests at the end of the podcast is what percentage of hash rate will be based in hydro or immersion and what percent will be at home mining. We won't get to that one on this pod. I won't put you on the spot there. I think both of those answers is probably like lower single digits at the most. Wolfie, I want to thank you for your time and we can leave the conversation there. Thanks so much for joining us on the podcast and look forward to reading your reports and talking to you again soon.
Sure. Good to have you.